Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'm happy to introduce our guest speaker and my friend, Inryu Bobby Hodge-Sparger. She is the guiding teacher at All Beings Sangha in Washington, D.C. She's in the Suzuki Roshi lineage. And I met Inryu at a Soto Zen Buddhist Association conference. And also, a few of you heard my talk about my trip to Fort Sill in Oklahoma a while back, where I was with many, many other people, was protesting the detention of migrant children. And Inryu was down there as well. And that was a very powerful action. Inryu is very, very concerned about interconnections concerning climate change, social justice, racism, things like that. It's really great to have you here, Inryu. She's also a beekeeper. And last night, Kathy and Inryu and I were out at an outdoor place for dinner, and this honeybee came and just landed on her forearm and just stayed there for the longest time in the most relaxed way. And I just thought, that's a really nice song. That's a great guest speaker. So, welcome, Inryu. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Dunnan. Thank you for coming out this morning and being here. In addition to thanking Dunnan for inviting me and the Sangha for showing up, I also need to extend my gratitude to my teacher, Daryu Michael Wenger of Dragon's Leap Temple. And for those of you that were at the earlier talk, this little introduction will be similar, so I apologize. We study our teachers, and we really try to, once you land on somebody who you're going to spend a lot of time with, you like to know where they've been and what they've done. And Daryu was in San Francisco at San Francisco Zen Center when Katagiri Roshi came there to help Suzuki Roshi with teaching the forms of practice and being a good example of someone in our Soto Zen lineage. And when Katagiri started coming out here to Minnesota, I've been told by my teacher that he would take him to the airport and have meaningful conversations at the tarmac at the airport. So the Dharma gets spread in lots of unusual places and ways. But Daryu, you know, really talks about the sangha and sanghas created here in this era, immediate Minnesota area, with a lot of fondness. And so I went to my first Soto Zen Buddhist Association conference last September, and I was just delighted to meet so many of the founders of the different temples in your area. And, I got why Daryu felt the way he did toward you all. People here are so caring and concerned about the world. And Dunnan and I became acquainted at that conference. And I was really lucky that he suggested that we provide some peer support for each other, which we've been doing over the past year. And I was just a few days ago down in Milwaukee, where Suzuki Roshi lineage groups, of which there are now 70 across the United States and some in Europe and even South America, but about 40 of the groups were represented at this conference down in Milwaukee, in Racine, actually. And so I thought, gee, I'm just down the road. I want to come up to Minnesota. And I floated the idea, and Dunnan said, "Yeah, come on up to Minnesota." So here I am. So my full Dharma name is Shinshi Inryu. Shinshi means body wisdom, I have a background, a long background as a yoga teacher. I ran a teacher training school for about 10 years in Washington, D.C. I also have a background in homeless services and emergency services. And a little piece of my background I often don't let slip, but somehow I'm going to today, is that I actually worked in naval intelligence for a part of my life. Yeah. So body wisdom is the Shin Chi, and Inryu means hidden dragon. So I got a little part of my Dharma teacher's name, the dragon part, which is nice. And so that was given to me when I received Jukai, when I received lay precepts from him. And so some of the people in the room you see have these blue little representations of Buddha's robe around their necks. And that means that they are lay practitioners who've studied Buddha's way, studied the precepts, and wish to take a vow toward conducting their life in a certain way or abiding in a certain way for the benefit of all beings. They are bodhisattvas, living bodhisattvas. When I see a rakasu around somebody's chest, it gives me a lot of joy. Because I think, wow, that's, you know, bodhisattvahood walking around. It's alive right there. People doing their best to uncover the best, right? To see what's there. So anyway, I had that experience in 2005. And then in 2013, with a number of my Dharma brothers and sisters, I became a priest. And they shaved off all my hair. I looked pretty funny. I don't know if any of you have had no hair before, but it's a really strange feeling. The sun shining on your head and you have no hair, water touching your head, you have no... It's a truly experiential new thing for some of us. Some of you, I'm sorry, it's a natural event and you have that happening all the time. But And then just a couple of summers ago, Daryu gave me what's called transmission, which is his full investment that I could teach fully, that I'm no longer his student, although I will hang on to him as long as he lets me. I call him all the time. We have meals. We confer about things. We share joy with each other. So that's a very special relationship that I continue with. I'm originally from Southern California, so long way from here, and a long way from where I live right now, which is Washington, D.C. And I've been living in the city so 26 years, and in that area for about 35 years. Yeah. So I live in a neighborhood called Adams Morgan. It's right on the east side of the National Zoo. And about, I don't know, half-hour walk from the White House. I live there with my husband, Kurt, of 24 years, my dog, Henri, and four rescue cats. And I have to share the names of them with you, and they'll be present here. So one of them is Francis. The other is Lucky Liberty, born on the 4th of July. And found in a shoebox in a park. She was about yay. She's still causing trouble. And Mr. Chill. And little girl. So those are the creatures I live with. Two and four-legged. In 2004, wanting to practice this way, Suzuki Roshi's way, I helped to found a Zen group in Adams Morgan, in what was my yoga studio at that time. We just started with four people sitting together, and we've been rolling along ever since, just so slowly sort of building what we do and figuring out how to do it. We have sessions, like you do, our practice period this year. Our topic is The Whole World is My Body. And we'll be seeing films to bring attention to our relationship to the world. We'll be hearing speakers, both learned and young. And we'll be having discussions. We're actually going to ask people to consider accepting a challenge each month of the Ango to change some behavior. So literally to like sign up to say, I vow not to use disposable cutlery when I'm out and about for 30 days. And we're going to hand them a set of bamboo forks and knives and spoons and say, go do it. See if you can change your behavior. And other things as well. Planting trees. Our Sangha's been planting native trees out at the farm where we have our sashins. And it amazes me, some people have never planted a tree. Has anybody not ever planted a tree? A few of us. Okay. It's a really great experience. It's a really great experience. Plant a tree. So a couple summers ago, we had a visiting teacher from San Francisco whose name is Marcia Lieberman. She's a senior lay teacher. So she's decided not to become a priest, but to devote herself in practice. She's been Shuso head student at Green Gulch. And she kind of travels around to groups like yours, like mine, kind of offering some of the teachings that she's explored deeply and has ambition to share. And one of those teachings was something called Sajiki. So Sajiki is a way of noticing where you're at in the season. So typically here in the United States, we talk about the seasons being like four main seasons, right? Spring, summer, fall, winter. But in Sajiki, it gets broken down into 72 seasons. So five days in each season. And you may be aware of, if you're outdoors a bit, if you're not, you know, having to sit in an office all the time, the ways that the environment around you changes subtly and not so subtly through different times. And there might be ways of sort of distinguishing and seeing that. So why would that be of interest to a Zen teacher or a Zen student? Well, our practice is to be fully present on our cushion and aware and awake. And the context, the world we live in, this is it. You know, the heat and the cool and the wind. Our experience of them, our ability to perceive them, through our eyes, the sensation of on our skin, the taste of something in your mouth. You know, these are things that are almost seems like they should be self-evident. And I'm going to paraphrase something I remember. I think it was Katagiri Roshi who talked about how he held up a cup and he said, "Oh, poor cup. People think you're just a cup." When, in fact, the whole universe is in this cup. You know, what an opportunity to see the vastness, to see all the systems, to see everything that went in to a cookie that you're eating. It really is a chance to see how rare and precious your life is. It's not just about appreciating it, but to really experience it. Right? To let nothing else divide your attention from that experience. And then with this, what happens with Sajiki is you get to write it down. You get to give it some words. So you might keep a Sajiki journal. I have students that do this, and I occasionally do it, where for a period of time, and often during Sashin, specifically during Sashin, we put out a little Sajiki table with blank books and some pens and calligraphy pens and some things. And we say, just sit down once in the day and write down something you felt and you experienced. You know, and people are like, oh, no, I can't do that. I'm not a poet. I'm not a writer. You know, people are going to think it's not worthy. It doesn't matter. Nobody may ever read it. But it's a chance for you to convey, to write down something that you experienced. And your experience is profoundly alive and important, whatever that experience is. So this idea of Sajiki. So I'll share a couple with you. One I wrote, and one Zen Master Ehe Dogen wrote when he was a young guy. Okay, who should I start with? Maybe I should start with Dogen. All right, a little heavy, but a little light maybe too. I'll read his twice. I'll come back to it, but let's start with his. In birth and death, we sympathize with ceasing and then arising. Both deluded and awakened paths proceed within a dream. And yet there's something difficult to forget. In leisurely seclusion at Fukakusha, sound of evening rain. So here's mine. I wrote this a few months ago. From high, I watch the tree limbs sway in the wind while a friendly rain falls. I look down to resume my reading. At times, the rain sweeps against my window, asking me to look up. Don't miss this living. Don't miss the vibration of the cars on the wet streets. Don't miss the om of the city. Don't miss the wonder of clouds parting and opening to vivid blue. So it's just a few lines, a few sentences, but it helps. I remember it, that experience. And maybe you, in hearing it, or if you were to read it, you would have a sense, because you're a human being like I am, of what that might be like. To look up and look down and then be called to look up again by something. So Ehe Dogen, he's considered the first Japanese ancestor in our lineage, in our Soto Zen lineage, and he lived between 1200 and 1253. So he didn't live to be as old as I am. He died at age 53. That gives me pause. He's known for promoting the practice of shikantaza, or just sitting, as a path to awakening. Right? You sit down here long enough, you keep your eyes open, and you might see something, you might be aware of something. You know. There are a host of Buddhist practices, but he taught this was the supreme way. He felt this was the supreme way to follow Shakyamuni's Buddha toward enlightenment. And in the earlier talk, I talked a little bit about Shakyamuni being a real person that lived in India, his experiences sitting. So, in birth and death, we sympathize with ceasing and arising. Both deluded and awakened, paths proceed within a dream. And yet there's something difficult to forget. In leisurely seclusion, at Fukakusha, sound of evening rain. So, Ehe Dogen was quite a writer, and he's known for volumes and volumes of writing on the subject of practice. And his writing can be quite mind-crossing, because he writes in a poetic fashion, and he writes with images, not step-by-step instructions. His writing is very much in the nature of koan, of asking questions. What did that mean? What is that he's trying to get at? Right. So I'll read a little bit of a little piece of his Genjo Koan, a little bit into the talk. But the person who translated this little piece that I'm going to read is somebody that some of you may know, Shohaku Okumura, who's a prominent Japanese teacher, 70 years old now, right? Used to be here for a bridge of time, supporting your Sangha. And now he's down in Indiana. He's talking about retiring from teaching. Pretty much only teaches Genjo Koan. So, you know, and he lived here and he moved down there with his wife. And they have two kids, both of which are grown. And I was really delighted to see that on their website, the Sanzen Sanshin website, that there are these little videos that his daughter has made. And they're really about practice life. So one of them is called Sit, but it's not just watching somebody sit Zazen. It's watching the activities of their family living in a temple. So cooking noodles and cleaning and being on the computer, interactions between the family members. I mean, it's really, really delightful little short film. And I would recommend that you go watch it. I don't think you can watch it anywhere but on the link on their website. And there's also this great little film that Yoko Okumura has made, this filmmaker, daughter of the renowned translator, about her mother's fascination with strawberries. Her mother has a strawberry fetish. If you watch this film, you will be blown away by how strawberries represent in every corner of her kitchen and in creating, you know, little things as gifts. And in addition to having the strawberry fetish, she supports the community. She's their Zen sewing teacher. And she has a little store, a little link on the website where she sells things that have been made out of little bits of scraps of beautiful fabric. Right? Nothing wasted, but something really beautiful, these little bags and little origami cloth items and things useful, you know, like the envelopes we put our rakusus in and things like that. So why do I bring that up? I appreciate translator Shohaku Akamura very much. But the wholeness of Zen practice is about the other components too. The wholeness of the women's practice sometimes is not seen. And I'm just, you know, I just sort of delight in the opportunity for somebody to say genuinely, look at something and say, this gives me pleasure. I am true to myself, and when I look at this strawberry, I just see the universe. And sharing that with us. So I'm very grateful to know that about Yoko and Yoku. So when we think about sustaining practice, it's a wide field. You know, some people are donors, some people sweep the floor, some people make the tea, some people write a talk that hopefully somebody will listen to, hear something useful in. Somebody made the cup. Right? There's lots of ways for us to embody our Zen practice. In fact, I would submit to you that if we don't embody it in all of the myriad ways, we're really missing out on something. Our Zen is a little hollow. So back to Genjo Koan, Dairyu, my root teacher, Great Dragon. He's often taught about Genjo Koan over the years. So here's a little piece of it. This is Dogen, right? As through translator Okumura. A fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there's no end to the water. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there's no end to the air. However, the fish and the bird have never left their elements. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. And I will paraphrase Dogen here. And people are like this too. Right? We're like this too. When we cover our full range, when we experience the full range, that's real. That's really being in full practice. Birds fly, fish swim, people live in the world. Whatever that is at this moment. So I ask you, how do we emerge? How do we fly? How do we swim? So I'd like to bring in another voice. This is a collection of writings that a person in my sangha, Naomi Ayala, who's a pretty well-known Puerto Rican poet, collected from her students at the Rosario International School in Washington, D.C. All of her students are people learning English as their second language. And the title of this is Write Who You Are. Right, so they're writing who they are. I'm going to make a little noise, so I'm just warning you. This is called Your Heart Saying Hello. Do you hear it? Bang, bang, bang. You probably think someone is knocking at your door. You probably think your father is repairing something. You probably think your little boys are playing a fight game in the yard. You are wrong. The sound is your heart saying hello to you. I love my heartbeat, not only because it is evidence that I am alive, but the most important reason I love it is that it brings me different feeling experiences. For example, sad or happy. This summer, I returned to my country and stayed with my parents for about 40 days. My daughter and I made them laugh every day. We talked, we cooked, went to the park, played card games, met with our other relatives together. The happy time went by so fast. My heartbeat was so irregular and louder when I said goodbye to everyone at the airport. It told me what is sad. A heartbeat is an amazing thing that lies in the world. It not only tells me that I am alive, but also what emotion I should have. I should be full of love to love anyone who needs love. I should be full of patience to treat anyone who needs patience. I should be full of persistence to keep doing something that I want to do. The person who wrote that, their name is Jing Bai. So I've been enjoying the Marie Kondo series on Netflix. Anybody here have seen that? Wonderful. Wonderful. I read her book about tidying years ago. Does anybody not know about Marie Kondo? Okay. She is a Japanese woman, I don't know, maybe in her 30s or 40s, who has an expertise and counsels and supports people in creating order in their homes, tidying their homes. So she's a consultant. People hire her to come and help them with their problems in their homes, kind of getting maybe things out of control. And she created this book that has very detailed information about like how to fold your socks and put them into a drawer, which actually when I read the book a few years ago, I tried and I've been doing it ever since. I haven't done a lot of the other things in the book. But it's really been fun to watch this show on Netflix, of all places, where she comes into people's homes in California. They've invited her in, and she helps them to discover what brings joy, what sparks joy in their home. And if you watch the show, or you can just imagine it yourself since you're sitting here on the floor, she gets down in Seiza, she gets down kneeling as this gentleman in front of me is doing. She closes her eyes and she takes her hands and then she touches the ground. And then she lifts up and opens her eyes and she says, okay, let's go. Right? She brings her presence. Often it's in the entryway of the house or someplace where there's feng shui, there's kind of movement of energy. And she just always starts that way. Maybe she introduces herself to the people whose home she's in, but everybody's just sort of watching her. And some people, a few people, get down on the floor with her. But most people are just watching her do this element of being with the house. Do any of you do that at your house? Do you stop and kneel down and touch the floor and be with your house? No. Yeah, a little bit back. Okay, the back. We kind of do that in the Zendo, don't we? We come in here, we settle our cushions, we get down on the floor. Even if you're in a chair, you're settling your feet with consciousness. Right, you're making this space sacred by your presence. And the cool thing about what Marie Kondo is bringing into some people's awareness, my awareness, is like how important that might be, how beautiful that might be to do in my home. Or for all of us to do in our home. Right? So I've watched all the episodes. So one of the things she has people do is she has people, like if, say, I'm in the kitchen and somebody's put out this cup and various things, she'll ask each person to pick up an object in their kitchen and say, does this give me joy? And, you know, this is a great mug. Yes, this gives me a lot of joy. I love using it. Then it gets its place in the cabinet. And then maybe I pick something else up. In my case, it would be probably a plastic glass or something, and pick it up. And it, does that give me joy? And I would probably say no. And I'd say thank you for your service and let it move on to its next incarnation, recycled or go to the thrift store or somebody else can use it. But so the things that you're encountering in your home are very deliberately something that you're engaged with, that you're aware of, that you're touching, that when you look at it, when you touch it, when you feel it, when you use it, when you drink out of the cup, there is an element of holding beauty or joy in your heart, allowing your heart to be involved in your experience. So a really close friend of mine, who I just love to death, she says, and again, I'll make some noise because this is how she does it, why does it have to be joy? Why can't it be some other something that you're asking me to have in my house with my things? So joy is hard for my friend to experience. Maybe it is for you too. So I had some joy this last spring, not tidying. Some of us from our All Beings and Sangha participate in the second Women's March in Washington, D.C. And, you know, this one had a little bit, it was a little a response that was different from the first Women's March. This one was more of a response to the Me Too movement. And we carried a beautiful new blue banner on which we had printed words which read, may all beings be happy and awake. So a little double meaning there, as in woke, right, in the common vernacular, to be woke. And as we were along the parade route, people would stop and they would just look at it and they would smile and they would gassho, or they would you know, say something about it. It gave people great happiness to see that message. And that gave me joy to be present and expressing and just a present, you know, being there, just physically being there, holding up a banner. And I didn't have to say anything. It was very uplifting. It was very beautiful. You know, but the we and all the thousands of other people gathered there. The reality is, we were gathered there because it's not healthy for all people currently in our country, right? The reality is, it's not healthy. Everybody isn't at ease in their lives, experiencing peace. And Me Too was long in arriving, right? In addition, recently in Washington, D.C., on the National Mall, you know, there's this big grassy expanse between the Lincoln Memorial and the Congress. There were laid out on platforms quilts that had been made across, I think, all the Americas, South, Central, and North America. And they were quilts made by communities that often don't get heard. Their experiences don't get seen. And so these were the stories of rape survivors and people who had suffered trauma, indigenous people, people of color, children, adults. Many men had expressed their trauma and rape on these quilts because they'd not been able to do it in any other way before. I was really quite taken with that. People that are not binary in their sexuality being able to say what had happened to them. So, you know, it's our path in this practice. It's one of the first things we do is to pay attention to what's happening. This path of wisdom of the past Buddhas points us to an understanding of seeing suffering and realizing that that's not the end point. Suffering's not enough. It's not the only option when faced with these sort of serious things. And it's certainly not the path to freedom. We can put ourselves right in the cages with everybody else. And where's the emancipation in that? Where's the freedom in that? So I would say, on the path, and it is a path, or uncovering, perhaps, to liberation from suffering, we can be in pain. We can bear witness. We can speak with right speech. We can, quoting Mahatma Gandhi, take care to be the change we wish to see in the world. And we can fully experience our lives and hold beauty and joy. We really must. It's the only thing that's going to shine a light help us on our bodhisattva path to appreciate and tie into what's really happening right here. So I'd like to do just a little Sajiki experience with you, if that's all right. I'd like you just to sit where you are. You don't have to move. And remember, this idea of Sajiki is to notice the season you're in. And then notice through your senses what you're experiencing. So let's just take a few minutes. I'll come back and bring you out of this meditation for a moment, in a few moments. So if nobody told you what words to use, what words would you use in your mind for this experience right now. Feel welcome to take a deeper breath and start to adjust your posture, to move a little bit, maybe to open your eyes if they're closed. So Marie Kondo, the tidying expert, her gift might be this aspect of even just broaching the possibility that something that we can use the word joy and ask ourselves, what is that? What does that taste like? What does that look like? What does that smell like? What does that feel like in my body? And does joy exist simultaneously with pain in the same day, moment? And all the other myriad problems in our world? Yeah, of course. But it's within our purview to really be liberated from, in some ways, the self-imposed or societal restrictions that confine our experience and our true living. Right? I mean, the way of the Buddhas is to be completely where you are, uncover yourself in that moment. To have, to emerge from our samsara, our dreamy state that Dogen was talking about in his poem. In 1230, when Dogen wrote his poem, he was living in seclusion, not far from the city. He was expressing some awareness, what he saw, appreciation for the fleeting nature of beauty. Things are always changing. If we don't stop and see it, it's already gone. If we don't let ourselves experience it, that's gone. But he was also conveying that the impermanence may not need to be negative, right? That he still has that memory of the rain. Yes, that moment was long ago. But the beauty of that resonates. It has a karma that continues to move forward and have unknown impact, as we know karma does. So just taking the moment to be in a place of being in joy may have great unknown karmic effect on your life, on the lives of others, on systems far beyond what you would imagine. The cosmos even. But definitely our earth. Right? The whole world is my body. The whole earth is my body. How could I not just take a moment to appreciate earth and the hands that made this, the heat that made the glaze, the, yes, very real joy of drinking clear, clean water out of a cup, appreciation for that beauty, to see the reflection of the light on the top of the water, pretty amazing. Kategori was right. The whole universe is in the cup. So sometimes something so simple as the evening rain is enough to spark joy in old man Dogen's heart. I guess he wasn't so old. He was a young man. You know, but also it reminds him then of his bodhisattva vow. He continued on. He didn't stop there. May it be with us as well. May we allow ourselves to ask, what sparks joy in our homes and lives, and honor that self-defining experience. May we emerge from our dreamy samsara and find ourselves ready to live in this world fully, standing and sitting with integrity. Maybe you'll join me for this last little bit by bringing one hand here, one hand here. Bring them together. May we emerge from our dreamy samsara and find ourselves ready to live in this world fully, standing and sitting with integrity, cultivating courage, the clear view and skillful means to bear witness to pain and suffering, and simultaneously fully embrace beauty and joy, evident in the myriad wonders that compose the ever-changing nature of our lives. May we do this for the benefit of all beings everywhere in the 10 directions. Thank you for listening to my talk.